Hello and welcome back to our Ghosts of El Paso one-shot with the fantastic Jason Cordova. Say hi, Jason.
Hello.
Oh. We'll go ahead and get back into it. And you want to kick us off?
Indeed, yeah. So if I recall correctly, we are getting ready to do the dusk phase. And we're going to talk a little bit about what that is. So the dusk phase is essentially a setup for the night phase. This is a phase-based game. The idea behind these phases is we really want to focus on cinematic gameplay. And so when we get into the night phase, as you're going to see, it's really fast. Like it lasts like 15 minutes. And it's fast and it's all about just like big moments and about drama and theme, okay? And the dusk phase helps us set up and get ready for that. And so we'd have to do a few different steps. But I think before we dive in, since it's been a little bit since we've met, I think we should just recap the threat right now. So our threat is the Corset. And we have in El Paso, at the Red Rock Cantina and Dance Hall, a Corset that is seemingly possessed by some kind of entity that is murdering people, and it has claimed three victims. The proprietors of the Red Rock have the bodies in their basement or in their root cellar because they don't want to cause a stir. So no one knows about these bodies except for you all and the proprietors of the Red Rock, although a few people who work at the Red Rock have some inkling that something is going on, that they think people have gone missing. They're not really sure what's up. In any case, as the Vigilance Committee, it's your responsibility to figure out how to deal with this Corset, because Lola Navas and Diamond Dave, the proprietors of the Red Rock Cantina, they have tried to destroy it. They've tried to take it away. They've tried to bury it, and it keeps coming back. And so you have a couple of questions here to answer, or you could, one of them you have to choose at some point. You can either try to figure out what does the Corset want. That is a complexity 6 question, and once you have answered it correctly, if you do, you get to resolve the threat by striking a bargain with the entity possessing the Corset so that it moves on from El Paso. Alternatively, you can try to figure out how can the Corset be controlled. This is a more complex question, but it allows you to resolve the threat by subduing the entity possessing the Corset. The Corset can then be chosen as a reward. Now, obviously, that second question has more salience in a long-term campaign than it does in a two-shot, but it's out there just in case you want to take that approach. Right now, you have 5 clues that you've collected so far, in addition to quite a lot of just extra context in the story that you can use when you're getting ready to answer the question. And also, I think it's a good opportunity to talk about some of the NPCs you've met, some of the side characters. There is Lola and Diamond Dave. You have also met the Russell sisters, Hannah and Sarah, or I don't know if you've met both of them, but you've definitely been made aware of them. They are dance hall girls at the Red Rock. John Fales, who is a regular, Stretch Bradford, the bouncer. And also you met an out-of-towner named Lady Antonia Eurydice Bathsheba Hargrave Steele, a paranormal researcher from London. Mm-hmm. And so these are all characters that are kind of, yeah, she's good. These are all characters that are kind of floating around. And you've had a chance to sort of do a little bit of investigating around the Red Rock while it was more or less closed for business. It really kind of gets going tonight. And so that's sort of where things stand with the Corset. You've probably should collect a few more clues before you make an attempt to answer one of the questions. Now, getting back to the dusk phase. So the dusk phase, our goal here is just to set up the night phase. And so the first thing we would do is we would resolve any playbook moves that are resolved during the dusk phase. And I don't think we have any that we have to resolve in the dusk. At a glance, I didn't see any, but I could be wrong.
I don't believe so.
Oh, doesn't Santa have one?
I think I do.
Oh, maybe
each dusk phase choose one. Yeah, I have one.
That's right, the saloon. You can either learn something interesting about an active threat, ask me any question you like, I'll answer truthfully and completely, or in the form of a clue, my choice. Or you gain something a drunk patron left behind or used as a tip. Say what it is and give it to another hunter. They add it to their personal quarters. Which do you want to do?
Ooh, I would love to learn something interesting about an active threat.
You get to ask any question in the world you want.
What are our clues so far?
Well, look at the threats tab.
Luckily, we have a great note taker, Andrew, who wrote them all down.
Yeah, I can review them real quick. We've got Marta, who was one of the victims, was singing a love song when she died, one she had written for John Fales to give to Stretch the Bouncer. There is a tunnel leading out of the Red Rock's root cellar where the corpses are being stored. There was a vision of a copper tub filled with blood. Luann knew Dave and Lola were up to illegal business and was going to tell the authorities. Who is Luann?
Oh, I think she's another victim.
Yeah. And then reflective surfaces in the Red Rock are cloudy. So those are your five clues.
Okay. I want to know what Lola and Dave have to do with the corset. Like, what are they hiding, you know?
Yeah. Okay. I like that.
If that helps.
Let's have a scene. I know we've been talking about having a scene in the saloon, so this sounds like a great opportunity to do one. And you have three saloon staff.
Yes.
Flapjack Houlihan, Bernadette, and Marcus Penrose. Flapjack is the cook, Bernadette is a croupier, and Marcus is a gentleman of the evening. And I think we'll just frame up a little scene with Miranda and, we'll say, Marcus. It's very late in the afternoon, getting ready to be, you know, kind of getting into the evening. And Marcus glides down the staircase, because there are, you know, rooms on the second story, and then down below is where all the card tables and bar and stuff are. And he's coming down, he's wearing his long gold brocade dressing gown and soft slippers. He is nothing like your clientele, though he is technically your employee. He's kind of a clientele slash employee. He does his business here in any case. And he comes down and he says, "Ms. Wilder, you look a little peaked this evening. Is everything okay in our lovely little burg?"
Not as such.
Let me guess, this has something to do with vigilance committee work.
And I give him a little look that says, "Yes, but I'm probably not supposed to talk about it with you."
He says, "You know, the Wounded Knight causes all sorts of trouble for my business. I am fairly certain that I have had several ghosts proposition me over the last few weeks. Ghosts are notoriously cheapskates and bad customers."
I was about to say, I don't know why you're complaining.
Well, and he's sort of like, he kind of orders his usual from Flapjack. And everyone, let's just paint the scene real quick. How can we tell that in his awkward, stumbling way, Flapjack is kind of secretly in love with Marcus, or at least kind of like, you know, at least starstruck, if nothing else?
Yeah. He always tries to give him just a little more food. He thinks Marcus is a little too skinny, so he always tries to give him just a little more as a little note of affection.
He takes the plate and he's like, "Why, Flapjack, a moment on the lips is a lifetime on the hips. We have to be careful with our portion sizes."
I think that maybe Flapjack stutters a little bit whenever he speaks to Marcus. You know, he's a little bit tongue-tied. Mm-hmm.
He is twitchy.
I'm going to say that it's that weird in-between where he's like, I want to look at him, but I don't want to be obvious. So almost every time he's caught staring, he just ducks his head away like, "Oh, I wasn't looking.
I think whatever drink he's serving, he kind of does that thing where he like goes to pick it up but like misses and kind of half drops it, and then like it kind of spills and he quickly like wipes it off, you know, gets a clean glass and pours another one.
Nice. Good. I love it. So he gets all settled and he says, "Well, I couldn't help but notice that you and the Reverend and Mr. Walker and our new friend, Mr. Conrad, have been spending the day over at our rival establishment, the Red Rock Cantina and Dance Hall. Is this the locus of the current troubles for the Vigilance Committee?" I'm putting two and two together, of course.
And she kind of stares at him for a minute and then gives him a bit of a sly smile and says, "It might be."
"Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. I've been hearing some rather troubling things coming out of that particular establishment, Diamond Dave." Well, I probably shouldn't go around spreading the business of my customers, but as you know, Diamond Dave frequently employs my services.
And I think she smiles and she says, "Do you want another gin?"
Oh my goodness. Is this going to come out of my earnings?
She shakes her head and pours him another.
Fabulous. My goodness, Miss Wilder, we almost never, ever find you in this friendly, simpatico sort of state, just giving away free drinks. You must really want to know something.
She walks over to him and puts the drink down, but leaves her hand on top of it. And she says, tell me what you know about Dave. Indeed, and kind of leaves her hand on top of it.
And I'm going to answer in the form of a clue, finally. answered your question. I like this. In the form of a clue, which is to say, he says, well, you should know that Diamond Dave has what I believe our dear Reverend Potter would call heathen paganistic beliefs, untoward religious practices, heretical ideas, Ms. Wilder.
And I think she takes her hand off the drink and she says, you're one to talk.
Well, I just mean to say, I think he worships the devil.
Okay.
And I think she does laugh because she thinks it's a joke and then like stops laughing and looks at him.
Oh, he's dead serious. I'm dead serious, Ms. Wilder. That man has given every part of him to Satan himself, I have no doubt.
Not Diamond Dave.
And Marcus, tell me how do you know this, darling?
Well, let's just say that what I thought was starting as a rather exciting evening involving candle wax and other implements started to involve some rather unsavory elements. I was particularly put off by the burnt lavender, let's just say the sort of, he brought out some things that had smell of fried hair and feces and other things. It was all quite disgusting, and he started making marks on things, and, well, either he has some very, very, very bizarre sexual tastes, or he is plainly in bed with the devil, Miss Wilder. That is my informed opinion.
Quite literally, as the case may be. All right.
So if there's any trouble over at the Red Rock, it could
perhaps
be he invited it in.
Stay away from Dave for a little while.
Yes, well, I will take that under advisement, Miss Wilder. And he swans back up to his room.
Drink and toe.
Indeed. But there's your clue. Diamond Dave has alternative religious beliefs.
Interesting.
And so, let's continue with our phase. And somebody can note that clue down on the threat.
Andrew's got it.
All right. Now I'm going to pose another paint the scene question, but this time about the wounded knight. So one of the things we want to do in this game is not just explore ghosts. Ghosts are a big part of this game, obviously, and the way ghosts affect the land and the way the wounded knight affects the land. We also want to, but we want to take a look at like how the wounded knight affects just life in El Paso beyond the dangers and threats that the Vigilance Committee has to deal with. And so I have a number of things I can pose to you here. Let's talk a little bit about this night phase. So in order to get the night phase set up, I want to just get a read on what everyone would be interested in doing tonight. Now, it doesn't mean you're going to get to do it. I like to say that the day belongs to you, but the night belongs to me. But I do want to hear your ideas. And so bearing in mind that you don't have, in game terms, you don't have a lot of time. The night phase is really fast and it's very cinematic. We just kind of focus on big moments. But I'm curious, nevertheless, what you would be interested in doing, either something you want to do to pursue, like, you know, continuing the investigation or maybe something else. But we'll start with Jack Walker.
Well, since my playbook, principal among all my goals, even more so than the current threat itself, is for me to get back to where I am meant to be, because I am not meant to be here, I remember saying previously that I wanted to investigate the occult book that I had found in my host's house. And that might be it, but more pinpointed would be, perhaps I want to really be on the lookout tonight for something that might be able to point me in a direction as to why exactly am I here, and how do I get back? Because that's, like, not that the others know this, but I know for a fact I am not meant to be here.
Fantastic. You might also consider your dawn questions. The dawn questions, ideally, you answer as many of them as possible, yes, by the time we get to the dawn, so that you can get some experience points. So maybe think about your two dawn questions that you picked as well, and how you might be able to work some of that stuff into your scene, especially like the one that says, did you express a clear preference for the night over the day? That should be pretty easy to work into whatever you do.
Yeah, okay.
Reverend Potter, what do you think?
Well, I have a question. We picked a vice when we created the characters.
Indeed.
Does the vice have anything to do with the game, like, mechanically, or is it just something we kind of roleplay in?
It does. So whenever you start collecting conditions, and none of you really have any conditions yet, but once you start getting conditions, the way you clear them is by doing your vice with another character.
Oh.
And you sort of like open up to each other and you kind of are vulnerable with each other while you're, you know, gambling or whatever your vice is. So, but you can just do it just for flavor too. That's perfectly okay. Fine.
So for flavor then, because Reverend Potter would definitely not be doing this with anybody else. he would be partaking in his vice. I think this is something that he keeps very secretive, obviously because he is the reverend, but his vice is morphine from the war. I think it's something that at this point he kind of has to do or else he starts feeling like sick. So I think maybe as the day gets, you know, wanes on, he starts looking a bit paler, maybe a little bit sweatier until he finally, partakes in his vice, which he just blames on the heat, obviously. But yeah, so that's what he would get back to his room at Temperance Boone's house and
Temperance,
partake
that's right.
In this.
Forgot about her. Yeah.
You
might also, same thing, you might consider how you might work your Dawn questions into that as well.
I think this vice is kind of driven by guilt, so to speak. So it kind
of
plays
into
that.
Yeah. Mr. Conrad, you've got your schemes going on. Anything you want to do tonight related to that or to the investigation?
Yeah, well, previous episodes we established that in the night phase, I was pretty much going to have to talk to one of the Russell sisters.
That's right.
I forget.
About this. Yeah.
It was Hannah or Sarah, but whichever one I was kind of talking to get information from, I let slip that I had this scheme and drew her into it. And she is very interested in hearing more about it back in my wagon.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it was Sarah.
I think it was Sarah, too.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was Sarah. Fantastic. And so I can work with that. And finally, Ms. Wilder, what do you want to do tonight?
Am I allowed to bother the other people? Like the other players?
Oh, of course, yeah.
Cool, because I wanted to go grab... I wanted to go interrupt the good father while he what are you?
Reverend,
thank you. I wanted to go interrupt the good reverend and see if he would be interested in looking for the devil in someone's basement or whatever.
Oh my.
Okay.
Or in I want to go snoop around Dave's house. Basically.
I like that. Yeah, that sounds good.
I'm down.
With the reverend specifically.
I'm down.
Well, of course, we established last time that Dave and Lola, they actually live in the apartments above the dance hall. So like that's where they were keeping the corset originally. But you could still just go back to the Red Rock in general and kind of
I want to go snoop without someone watching me.
Yeah. Sounds good. Okay. So now that I have a good read on kind of what everybody wants to do, let's talk about Janus Mass prompts. I think we do have a couple of unresolved Janus Mass prompts. We can do those now, or you can wait until the Dawn phase if you wish. But I believe I'm owed one from Ms. Wilder and Mr. Walker as well. So would either of you like to go now, or do you want to wait?
Sure, I could go now.
Yeah, read your prompt and then go ahead and narrate it.
Okay. My prompt is, narrate a flashback to your happy, blissful childhood. I think Miranda is sitting behind the bar, kind of just watching the evening go on after she has this conversation with Marcus. And she's thinking about this afternoon, you know, how the corset almost killed her. And she's kind of thinking about, like, you know, just the past and the things that she's, like, missing. And she thinks, like, you know, like, I haven't talked to my mother in a long time. I think she hasn't talked to her mom since her father died. And I think she thinks back to a moment of... she thinks back to a moment when she was sitting on her father's shoulders in a very similar looking bar as he was going around doing bartender things. I think her father was the one that taught her how to mix drinks. And he's just kind of sitting on his shoulders and... and she's kind of like moving his shoulders almost like he's like a like some sort of like cattle or something, like he's a horse kind of, and she like pulls him in the direction of one bottle and then pours him in the direction of another bottle, and there's like a patron sitting on the other end of the bar that looks very amused at this, and eventually her father pours everything into a bottle and hands it to the patron, and the patron looks at it very skeptically and then picks it up and drinks it and makes a horrified face and then kind of smiles up at Miranda and is like, yep, it's good. And I think that's what she's remembering.
Fantastic. Thank you. Jack Walker, do you want to do yours?
I think I'll wait for mine until the dawn phase, I think.
Sounds good.
I also had to pick a mask, but I picked one that doesn't require a scene.
Indeed. You chose the Gilded Door. Let's talk about it, actually. Yeah. It's not something that's going to have a chance to come into play too much in this two-shot, okay. But in the campaign, the first person to select the Gilded Door, which is one of the options from the Mask of the Future, you take a condition called Most Beloved. This condition is permanent, and nobody else can then choose the Gilded Door. And the idea behind having the Most Beloved condition is as the campaign progresses and as more threats start to stack up, they become particularly focused on you. And so...
Oh, boy.
So Reverend Potter becomes like the focus of entities, of ghosts. Like, they are really intrigued by you. And you, and so it's sort of a way of putting your character right in the middle of the danger. And because you have a condition, it also puts... a lot of your die rolls at disadvantage whenever that's happening.
I love
so
that
you're,
for me.
Yeah, you start to be in quite a lot of like center of the drama, but also in quite a lot of danger. And so that's sort of the idea there.
This is not a position that Hannah is unfamiliar with.
No, it's not. Yep. No, it's not.
Hey, it we makes might see a little bit of it today, considering but we're yeah, focusing yeah. on the devil now. So.
yeah, we'll see. So that's kind of how that would work.
Okay.
That's kind of the idea there. With all that said, let's talk about the unseen, and then that'll be the last thing for the dawn phase or the dusk phase. So the unseen is a special mechanic that originated in the game that preceded this, the core between game. And in that game, the unseen was a series of scenes that depicted something else happening in the city of London on the same night as the monster hunters were doing whatever they were doing. It has no connection to the events of what the hunters were doing, but it was there to serve sort of thematic purposes. The unseen in this game, in Ghosts of El Paso, is very, very similar, except it explores different aspects of the American Southwest, in particular focusing on Texas, but also a little further afield. And so it has no connection to El Paso. It has no connection to the events of the Wounded Knight. It definitely has no connection to whatever the Vigilance Committee is doing. The idea behind the unseen, again, focusing on cinematic gameplay, is... we want to, you know how sometimes when you're watching like a really good TV show, they'll have like a scene that's kind of happening that like is echoing something going on in the main story, but it's not necessarily connected. This is a similar idea. We're going to narrate our unseen scene by scene, like as we, you know, sort of do it. And your job is to make connections, thematic connections between what's happening in the unseen with everything we've seen so far in El Paso. And so, and vice versa. You can narrate things in your nighttime scene that connect up to whatever's happening in the unseen. They can be thematic connections. They can be like visual connections. You can kind of talk, like you can repeat visual motifs or anything like that. The example I like to give from the London between is, in the unseen, we describe a sex worker dying of consumption, and they cough into a blood and into a, or they cough into a bowl. And so there's like blood in this bowl. And then in the hunter scene, one of the players describes a bowl full of beautiful red flowers. Like that's a connection. We call that an echo in the night. And you'll notice on your dawn questions, one of them is, did you experience an echo in the night? One of the ways you get your experience is to do this, is to make little connections between the unseen and the main scene. And so that's kind of how this works. Sometimes it's really subtle. Sometimes you do it accidentally, and that's okay too. That's actually better because it means the game is operating on something of a subconscious level. But you can also, and it can be really simple, or it can be really, or it could be a little bit more subtle and more more nuanced. It doesn't really matter. As long as you do it, you get an experience point at the end. I will introduce the unseen. The one we're doing is called A Dog's Walk. That is on line 68 of the little spreadsheet thing. A Dog's Walk says, a yellow dog with short hair and pointy ears lives under a barn on the edge of Dallas, a town of less than 5,000. A partially collapsed root cellar is now this dog's humble abode. It is dry and cool in the day, and an old horse blanket keeps it warm at night. And then once we get started, Reverend Potter has the first narration, which we'll get to when we start the night phase. The unseen is also a timer. Basically, once all the unseen's done, then the night phase is done. So,
interesting.
Okay. With all that said, we will kick off with our yellow dog, Reverend Potter.
Oh, I didn't realize I thought I was gonna answer a question. Okay, sorry.
Just read that little. You can read it, yeah, and then just do what it says.
Okay. A reliable dinner can be found in the back alley. The woman who cooks for tenants in the Overton boarding house for travelers is careless when she throws things in the refuse bin. What choice bits does the dog find in the alley this evening? I think the dog finds some sausage links. I think kind of still, you know, bound together. And as the dog is eating the sausage links, it knocks over a box, and this box spills open and seems to be full of ribbon. Ribbon like what would be used to bind a corset.
Very nice. Jack Walker, you have this book. A book that you found in your host's home, correct?
That is correct, yes. It was hidden, apparently, in my host's house, yes.
A very interesting detail, knowing what we know about Diamond Dave now. What do you do?
I think he's interested in the book anyway, and I think he's flipping through it. He's trying to familiarize himself, because I think on a deep level, on some instinctive level, he is familiar with certain symbols or such in this book. He wants to familiarize himself. And in this moment, because he knows too, and I had previously said that when he was having the conversation with the spirit in the cellar, that his own symbol was the Ouroboros. And looking through this book, I think he does see these different symbols. I think that what he, or well, you can, you know, tell me if I'm breaking anything or anything, but yeah, he's going through, and it seems to be it doesn't seem like a summoner's book, but it seems to have possible instructions in ritual for an entire range of things, including, you know, possibly, you know, binding of a higher being or
well, let's see. Make the information move.
Okay. Yeah.
Make the information move. I would say, for you, I'm going to make it reason.
Okay. That is an 8 with no additions.
We'll come back to this. Reverend Potter, give us the scene right now. You're by yourself. You're in your room. You can hear downstairs. You can hear, what's her name again?
Temperance.
You can hear Temperance downstairs. I think she's like singing hymns downstairs. We can kind of faintly hear Temperance down there. What are you doing?
I think he is has a lot on his mind considering everything that's happened today. I think he has a bookshelf, and one specific book actually has like the inside like cut out so that it's like a secret kind of like a compartment, and that's where he keeps his vice, so to speak. So I think he is walking over to his bookshelf and getting ready to help himself feel well, so to speak.
Mr. Conrad, you have you're open for business, your wagon. You only have one surly-looking potential customer standing in front of the wagon right now. An old farmer, arms crossed, looking very, very skeptical.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just like, all right then, Flim Flam Man, convince me.
You, my good sir, look like a very discerning man. Am I correct?
I am.
And you know land, I assume, yes?
I know land like the back of my hand.
It's to be expected. Tell me, what makes good land, my good sir?
Well, I suppose land that has got good soil, fertile, that's good land.
And Conrad is just kind of nodding, and he says, and as I've been telling you, there's prime, untouched land out in New Mexico. Not developed yet. Still wild and natural. There's a great river that runs through this tract that I am looking to sell parcels of. And I'm sure that there is great soil in such an area. What would you think?
Well, I am skeptical, Mr. Conrad. But I suppose, with all this Wounded Knight business, it's going to get harder and harder to be sticking around here trying to make a living. Should like to go somewhere where we don't have such afflictions.
Well, I would think that the frontier would be a perfect place for that. Not as much civilization around, muddying things up.
Mark's suspicious. Or okay. Mark, you're a little suspicious thing.
I'll allow it.
Miranda, you were going to go check in on Reverend Potter, yes?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's a bit of a problem. Uh-oh. Before you get out the door, someone at Bernadette's table... one of the card players is refusing to pay up on a wager he made. And Bernadette, you know, she's trying to like get him to pay, and she kind of keeps giving you a look like, this guy's trouble. What do you do? We'll go even further. He says, I think you cheated. And Bernadette says, I have never cheated anyone at one of my tables ever in my life, and I am offended by the very notion. And he's like, well, he's kind of going back and forth, you know.
I think she goes over and she looks at the man. I think she has a little revolver around her waist. She kind of hangs her hand next to it just to let him see it. And she looks down at the guy and she says, and what evidence you be having that my dear friend here cheated?
Mr. Conrad, let's go back to a dog's walk. It's your turn.
Okay. All right. Avoiding the hustle and bustle of wagons, horses, and people on a major street, the dog hangs a right and trots down the quieter side street. What domesticated animal does the dog half-heartedly harass on their walk? So we see this yellow dog with short hair and pointy ears kind of walking down a dusty residential street. And as he's walking, he comes upon an outdoor rabbit hutch, which is pretty rare. You know, there's not a lot of those, but apparently this person is raising rabbits. And as he walks up, he sees a couple of these rabbits kind of outside in this little fenced-in area. They're kind of scratching around in the dirt. It's kind of a reddish dirt, and these rabbits are a little dusty. And there's just something about the color and the fact that they're, prey, in a way, that sets him off. And he starts barking at these rabbits. And they kind of run and scatter and find, like, their little shelter and go kind of huddle up and shiver in it. And he is satisfied with that. He kind of understands he can't get in there and continues walking on his way.
Jack Walker, you're going through this book, and you will discover something that might be of use in the Vigilance Committee's investigation. Indeed, you will find instructions for binding an evil spirit using black ribbons.
Oh my.
Ooh.
All right. He definitely...
A practice that goes back all the way to the time of Salem.
Hmm. He remembers. He remembers that.
Yeah. I have a quick question, Jason.
Yeah.
Is this isn't a clue. This is just like a resource for later, right?
No, this is a clue.
This is a clue. Okay. I believe.
Yeah. I will write that down.
Mm-hmm. This is a clue. I do owe you a complication on that clue, though.
Oh, boy.
You actually set down the book as you find your own hands bound with black ribbons.
Oh, no.
I'm going to give you a condition called bound in black ribbon.
Okay, I'm sorry, am I, like, I mean, I'm guessing I'm someone's servant now. Someone
I don't know.
Is...
We'll find out.
Oh, boy.
Ooh, okay.
Let's cut back over to Reverend Potter.
You never read the creepy book.
Reverend Potter, you're you know, you've probably like tied off a vein. You're injecting yourself with morphine at this point.
Yes.
And you probably, I'm sure it wouldn't be too much of a stretch to say that you sometimes have hallucinations or visions whenever you start to enter into this sort of relaxed fugue state of that morphine provides.
Yeah.
And yet you are on the second story of Temperance's home, and there is someone outside your window where there is no landing to stand, staring into your room, a gaunt man. What do you do? I'd like the night move, actually. The night move says...
It's not terrifying at
all. What are you afraid is going to happen right now if you lose your nerve?
A gaunt man where there's no landing to stand on. I am afraid that this thing is gonna attack me or injure me or even worse in some way if I'm not able to keep my cool.
It is worse than that. This spirit is going to enter into your room and literally remove your tainted soul from your body.
Wow.
Oh, gosh.
You have the option of putting the morphine down right now or rolling the dice.
Oh no, I think I'll roll the dice.
You're going to roll with sensitivity. And let me take a look and see if you have any conditions right now. And you have Most Beloved. This is why this is happening. I'm putting you at disadvantage as well. So because you're at disadvantage, you're going to roll 3 dice and take the 2 lowest.
Oh, no. Okay.
Based on who is rolling this roll, I'm expecting snake eyes.
Why did you have to pick this one, Hannah?
Okay. I thought... Okay, let me explain my reasoning. I was thinking, like... Oh, it's gonna make people like me more. And it'll be really funny that the shy, kind of awkward preacher is just so loved by all of these random people. But no, that's not what it was at all.
It's something like you.
You're very loved, just not by people.
Oh my gosh, you're not gonna believe this. I just rolled 3 sixes.
What?
What the heck?
In our... Potentially
in our
devil
sixes.
Game?
In our scary game?
I'm gonna
game.
Take a picture. I'm
you
not
just rolled
joking.
The devil's
the number. The number
I'm
of the beast.
The number of the beast.
Six, six.
Oh my god.
The 6-3 score on 6. Oh my gosh. Wow.
Well, it's a very good roll, so...
Is it though? Yeah. Is it though? Yeah, I feel like this is a fell portent
it's an
because
omen.
Hannah
yeah.
rolled it.
Mm.
Oh my gosh, I can't believe that just happened.
I mean, hey, if we wanted a title, we could call
and
it...
And I think that may be the best thing you've ever rolled.
We could call it
it's the best
six,
thing I ever rolled, and it's the devil's number. So, like, is that a good thing?
I guess we'll find out.
We'll come back and resolve the scene in a moment. Let's go
of course.
Back to Mr. Conrad. Mr. Conrad, you actually see... I think your pitch is interrupted when you see... Sarah Russell, not with sister, running towards you in a panic.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, Mr. Conrad, come quick.
And he sees that she's kind of, you know, in distress. And he still is talking calmly, but he's the edge to his showmanship is maybe a little bit less prevalent. And he just says, what's wrong, my dear?
Ms. Navas, she told me to come get you. She said to find somebody on the Vigilance Committee. It's Hannah. It's Hannah, come quick. And she runs towards the Red Rock.
Yeah. And he will actually run, you know, behind her and he'll get going.
Indeed.
He's in the back of his mind. He's kind of hoping he runs into somebody else, but he knows this is probably important. You know, his long game is he's got some things he wants to find out from this wounded knight. So
oh, I know.
It's important he's in the thick of it.
Miranda, this man who you've never met. He's just some cattle rustler passing through. Big guy, though. He looks at you and says, is that the way you treat patrons of your establishment, pulling weapons on them?
I ain't pulled nothing yet, darling.
Well, unless you intend to make that iron hot, I suggest you turn around and go back to Tendon Bar. In fact, why don't you go ahead and bring me another drink?
She smiles and turns around and walks back to the bar and pours some of the crappiest whiskey she has into a glass, comes back over and dumps it on his head.
Very good. Let's do the night move. What are you afraid is going to happen if this gambit fails?
I guess I'm afraid he'll get belligerent.
It's worse
He's
than that.
He's not already?
Yeah, it's worse than that. I think he will pull a gun on you. Let's get some dice on the table.
Okay.
I think it's going to be with composure. If you want to proceed with this, it's going to be with composure. 2d6 plus composure.
7.
We'll come back to that. Let's return to the dog and its walk. Miranda.
An empty building on 2nd Street used to be a butcher shop. In the heat of the night, what does the dog find to amuse itself and while away the long hours? I think the dog finds a rat. Like a half-dead rat that it can kind of chase around.
Anything else you want to say about the scene? What does the rat do?
I think the rat wants to escape, but it's clearly sick. You know, like, I think it's moving very slowly, and the dog kind of catches it and tries to toss it like it's trying to play fetch with itself almost. And the rat just kind of thumps to the ground and then meekly tries to get away but can't. And eventually, I think maybe the dog loses interest, and you can just see the rat still there, still kind of half alive.
Speaking of trapped creatures, Mr. Walker, please make the night move when you see the black ribbons around your hands. What are you afraid is going to happen if you lose your nerve?
I am afraid that whatever control I may have over this host could be ultimately surrendered to whatever is apparently attempting to bind me.
Indeed. The host will be destroyed and you will be kept inside a phylactery.
Oh boy.
This is indeed a trap.
Okay, got it.
I'm going to put you at disadvantage because of the ribbon condition, and I would like for you to roll with vitality.
Great.
3d6, take the two lowest.
A 5 and a 4. Let me roll one more time. 5, 4, and 6. So 5, 4.
Oh. A 9. Not too bad.
What's your vitality?
0.
Actually, let me check that.
I think it's 0.
That
it's
wasn't 0. With the addition, but I think it's 0. Let me.
Yeah, it's 0.
0. Okay. 9.
You hear a voice over your shoulder, Mr. Walker. It's Lady Antonia, Eurydice Badgeba Hargrave Steele. She says, "What a curious vessel you've chosen this time around."
Am I at least able to move, or am I completely immobilized here?
You're not going to fall into her trap because you succeeded on your roll, but the complication is I think she has you marked.
Okay. I think he turns around and he's got the ribbons around his wrists, and then he just nonchalantly just snaps them in two, and he's looking at her with, it's not anger, it's more of just in general curiosity, because I don't think for a mortal to clock him this fast is not something he has seen in a very, very long time.
Don't look so surprised. You may not remember me. You tend to forget things whenever you make these sorts of changes. But I have been chasing you for a long, long time. Or really, we've been chasing each other.
Sorry. Couldn't resist. Way to kill the mood.
And he just I can roll for this if you want, but he looks at her, and does he, with his sensitivity to the otherworldly, can I roll to see if he can discern anything about
I'll tell
her?
You. She has on her around her neck an ankh, an Egyptian ankh symbol, which protects her against death. And you will now recall that she is actually hundreds of years old. And she has been slipping through your fingers all this time. She says, "Oh, I see it dawning on you now."
You?
I very nearly caught you.
I'll have you one day.
The day is not today, but perhaps you'd be willing to come visit me at my hotel room tomorrow. I happen to know some things you might be interested in related to your new gig. I'm going to give you a condition marked by Lady Hargrave Steele.
Okay.
Reverend Potter.
Yes.
You are going to maintain your composure, and because you got a 12 plus on the roll, you get a bonus as well. The bonus is going to be this ghost floats into your room. It is in fact the ghost of one of the victims of Sylvester Stanton, the local Lothario. He floats into your room and he has a sort of sad look on his face. I think he seems almost as lost as you in some sense. But he puts his hand on your little nightstand, and when he lifts it, he's left something for you.
Oh, what is it?
a small bag of dance tokens from the Red Rock Cantina. Which is your clue, weirdly enough. Which is a clue.
Okay.
And then he disappears. Maximilian Conrad, speaking of the Red Rock, it is all, you get down to the dance hall portion, it's a, there's a big show going on. They do this like sort of Eve in the Garden of Good and Evil kind of thing, you know, show, and like, you know, there's like a dancer dressed up like a snake and they have an apple and all this business, right? Mm-hmm. And
I love it.
Hannah like takes you around the back towards the behind the stage to go up the stairs to the apartments. She's like, hurry, hurry. Miss Novice is on the stair. She's like, they sent you? Where's Miss Wilder? Where's Reverend Potter?
Oh, you know, I'm sure they're just busy. But,
well, there's no time for that. Come this way, quick. And they.
Yes, of course.
She goes up and you can hear before you even walk into the room, the door is closed. And you can hear from the inside, I would like the night move from you.
Okay.
What are you afraid is going to happen if you lose your nerve right now?
I'm afraid. I mean, I don't even have the context of the supposed devil worship.
Yeah.
But I think there's some context clues that Conrad might be able to pick up on. I think that... I am afraid that I am going to become the sacrifice of a dark ritual.
Ooh.
Oh, boy.
How are you going to say it's worse than that, huh?
It's worse than that. The rest of the Vigilance Committee will find your body wearing the corset.
Oh, awesome. How humiliating.
You're going to roll with composure 2d6 plus 1.
Okay. And I don't believe I have any conditions right now, so... This isn't the kind of system where you can do anything to try to, like, boost the roll or...
You can. If you can work in one of your personal quarters items, you get to get advantage.
Oh, and actually, I have that move, too. Let me see if I've got my move.
Okay. Oh, your Tuscaloosa toolbox?
My Tuscaloosa toolbox.
Indeed, yeah.
I always have an item from those below up my sleeve.
Yeah, absolutely.
I will mark suspicion. Okay, I like this. Okay. Conrad. Maximilian Conrad... He has this face, he has this kind of showmanship about him that he always puts on, and I think he very quickly, he's not super impressive or anything, but all of a sudden there are two fighting knives in his hands, and he just flips out of his sleeves, standing in this hallway, and he's
Lola
got
and Hannah, their eyes widen.
He's got a much sterner expression on his face, and he just says, I'll look into this.
So you have a burst of courage. I love it. Mark suspicion, but roll with advantage. So 3d6 plus, take the two highest and then add one.
Okay. Well, I'm glad I did that because I rolled a 2, a 1, and a 6. So I get a 9.
Very good. Finally, Ms. Wilder, you pour the drink over this guy's head and it instantly like changes his whole attitude. He stops being like angry and he just sort of like is totally diffused. And he says... Well, you certainly have more fire in you than I would have guessed.
And she just gives him a little smile.
I like a woman with fire in her.
Get the hell out of my saloon.
And he says, and he's kind of walking backwards. He's like, all right, I'll go. But I feel like we kind of got off on the wrong foot.
She looks him up and down and says, uh-huh.
Let's take our last trip on the dog's walk.
Headed back to their barn across town, the dog smells something scaly under the boardwalk. What scars show how this dog previously learned to avoid scaly smelling things? As the dog continues along the way, he smells this scaly something. And I think the reason that he picks this up is that normally it would be some kind of an animal smell, but what he actually smells is... He smells something that smells a bit sulfurous. The scars, what scars show, is that along the dog's flank, there appears to be a very long scratch spot where the fur did not grow back. And previously, he was just doing his regular old dog thing, and he managed to come across an animal, a enormous diamondback rattler, possibly in connection to the Wounded Knight or otherwise, just a very large diamondback rattler. Oddly enough, rather than, of course, rattlers have the rattle, this snake did have the rattle, but it was like the tail was like split two ways. One had the rattle, the other had this long sort of claw that the snake could whip out and try to, it tried to catch the dog, managed to tear this strip of fur off, and it ran off, but the dog is now fairly traumatized, and it is a scar that it's carried for the rest of its life.
At the end of the night phase, everyone but Mr. Conrad, please give me just a little vignette of your character at the end of the night.
Can I just say something first?
Yeah.
I don't like that I was singled out. It makes me worried.
You should be.
Well, your story isn't over.
I figured.
Miranda, are you coming over to Temperance Boone's house to see me?
Yeah, I'm gonna go knock on the Reverend's door.
Reverend Potter, Caleb. He would answer, but you could tell he looks a bit disheveled. His eyes are a bit glassy. He looks a bit pale.
I think Miranda knows what someone under the influence of something looks like. But she doesn't say anything, and she says, "I learned something you might want to know about."
That feels like a good cut. I don't even think we need to go any further than that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Jack Walker, what do you look like at the end of the night?
I think he's back at the host's house at this point, I believe, or I'd said I was, and I think he steps out into the night air. He takes in this big breath.
Oh, Miss Steele, you're unwise to reveal yourself so boldly to me. I have chased you over centuries. But you will run no more.
And he just sits there. He's got this 1,000-yard stare on him because I think he is resolved. He is resolved that she is not going to slip him again. He is going to get that amulet off her, and there is going to be a reckoning for her. He is resolved in that.
Mr. Conrad, you go inside the room to find Ms. Russell wearing the corset, crawling upside down on the ceiling. She bends her neck back in such a way that she's looking directly down at you. And she smiles.
You for sovereign above the Zimmer Ward.
And then she just falls to the ground. How do you feel right now?
He is in shock, I think, because he was expecting probably not that. Like, he was probably expecting a regular person chanting or something. He didn't really know what to expect, though. So I think his initial feeling is shock.
Take a condition called in shock.
Okay.
And that will wrap the night phase. Thank you, everyone.
Oh, boy. All right.
The dawn is pretty fast, so let's do that. So for the dawn phase, it's just our upkeep phase. If you had resolved a threat, you would collect rewards, but you have not yet. And so now we just go to dawn questions. The first one is the same for everybody. Did the hunters answer a question? Not yet. The second is, did the hunters resolve a threat? Not yet. However, you might have experienced an echo in the night. Jack Walker, you certainly did. I picked up on the snake and all the sort of like devil references with the sulfur and all that stuff. So you get to mark that one.
Okay.
Mr. Conrad, did you get an echo in the night?
So what I was hoping for is that I might have some kind of scene at the Red Rock or the Dusty Jackalope, or maybe some way to show kind of the theme of the conflict between these two. It's what I was going for with like the dusty rabbit covered in red dirt or rock.
I kind of picked up on that with the red. Yeah, I picked up
on
that.
But I don't know if I actually had the echo part of that. I don't know if I quite got there.
No, I like it. I like it. The red dirt on the rabbits, I think, reflects the red rock pretty well. You can, because they're all kind of like, you know, kind of like prey creatures there at the red rock. So I love that. Yeah, you can take that one.
Cool.
Miranda Wilder. Actually, let's go back to Reverend Potter. Reverend Potter, you certainly got an echo in the night with your runes. And we all, and that was fun because we all kind of picked up on that and ran with that one. So
yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then finally, Ms. Wilder. I think you got one as well, Ms. Wilder, because you talked about, when you were saying, talking about the rat being trapped, I really thought about, whether you intended this or not, I thought about Reverend Potter being trapped by his addiction. But I'm also open to other interpretations, I guess.
I think that's a good one. I think the kind of the dog kind of continually beating up the rat but leaving it alive.
Yeah. I took it as an addiction thing. I don't know why, but yeah. I kind of picked up on it because it totally works. Yeah, I'm into it. So you can take credit for that one as well.
Cool.
Let's keep going. Let's go back to Reverend Potter. Reverend Potter, did you let yourself be driven by guilt? Yes, you certainly did.
Yes.
Did you try to convince someone to do the right thing?
Well, I did talk to John in the bar and convince him to tell me the truth about what he knew. I don't know if that's necessarily doing the right thing.
I don't know if it's, no, that was just regular vigilance committee duty. I don't know if that quite
That's okay.
plays. But you still got two XP, so it's not bad. Mr. Walker, did you punish a wayward soul by trying to send it back to the spirit realm? I think you're trying.
Well, I didn't. Well, I did send the one guy onward, but it wasn't a punishment. It was... I've summoned you back to answer a question and now sending you back.
Yeah, I don't think it was quite a punishment. I do think you expressed a clear preference for night over day, though, so you can take that one.
Okay.
And you got 2 XP. Let's go over to Mr. Conrad. Did you successfully draw someone into a scheme? I would say yes, you did, Miss Russell, even though the situation got a little waylaid. Did you blame someone else for your mistake or crime?
I don't think I did any crimes. Or made any mistakes. Yeah.
You're trying to commit a crime.
You are certainly
haven't quite managed
giving it your best effort.
Yeah.
Ms. Wilder, did you get your hands dirty to get the job done right? I think you literally did by pouring the drink on that guy.
Yep.
Did you show favor to those above you or contempt for those beneath you?
I seem pretty contemptuous of that one dude.
Oh, yeah, I agree. So you got 3 XP. So that's good. Everybody got 2 or 3 XP. That's pretty good considering we have not resolved a threat yet. And then now, if you wish, you can mark new dawn questions of the 2 that you can choose from. You can choose new ones if you want to or leave them the same.
All right.
And that just leaves our last Janus mask that is owed from Mr. Walker.
Yes. I think as part of this contemplative mood he is in, plus the resolve he has had strengthened in this moment, he casts his quote-unquote mind back to one of the earliest deaths he can recall. Now, he recalls every single one of them, but there was one in particular that stood out to him, which the camera comes up on a scene. It seems to be in the ancient world. The camera is coming down over a city street. You're seeing landmarks as the camera goes on, including things like the Colosseum, the Roman Forum, because this is the year 441 BCE. I'm sorry, let me actually read my move and I will explain here, sorry. Yes, Mask of the Past. Narrate a flashback to the first primeval death you witnessed as your sibling Famine did their work. So the camera is coming down this street, and of course all these structures are in near perfect condition because this is the Roman Empire, although a very unfortunate time, because walking down the road is a man in a gray toga and sandals walking down this street. Of course, he could appear in any form he wishes, but when meeting with a member of his own family, it's customary to at least communicate in this form. He walks up to someone who is standing there in the middle of the street waiting for him. Very tall, skeletally thin man wearing a black toga. He stops, looks at him, and he says, "You've done much work here, brother." He nods. He says, "Well, we do as we are bidden, do we not?" And he falls in behind him. Famine approaches a house, but rather than knock on the door or open the door, they both just phase inside. They're struck with this scene of, it's a kitchen, but there is no food at all. It's covered in dust. Everything is, and the streets, of course, are deserted. Everyone's inside, and in this silence, you hear in a back room, you hear. They enter this back room. There is an old man on a bed. Death looks, says, "Yes, I estimate not long now." And he approaches him, lifts his hand gently, and he hears behind him, Famine's voice says, "We fulfill our purpose,
nothing more. He looks back at Fan and says, as hard as it can be to do, it is only for us and none other. He'll close his hands around the one guy, and then you see this wispy, insubstantial form rise up from the body, and in that moment you see that Death's own physical fades away, and he becomes outlined in mist. Then all of a sudden there's this rush of wind, whoosh, and he fades away from this. And this, I actually looked this up, this actually was a historical famine in Rome back in the day. So.
Nice, thank you.
Nice,
I love it.
Very nice.
I figured with the timing being very specific.
I know, sorry. But I was just curious. I was like, I wonder if there was one.
That concludes the dawn. Be thinking about the clues. You'll recall that there are no... I don't know the answer to these questions. Mm-hmm. You all are going to figure out the answer to the questions, but you have to use the clues and any other context from the story.
Right.
And so be thinking about that. But yeah, we will go ahead and stop there, I guess.